to go. Taco to
and a big queue.
Taco to go.
Taco to go. Trip Taco just $2.99. Comes with a big Q, this deal so fine. Brisket breakfast, so much to choose for $2.99. You really can't lose.
Taco to go, taco to.
This deal legit.
Taco to go, taco.
Only at Quick Trip.
Taco to go, taco to go, taco to go.
$2.99.
Savers Live is presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
But I really liked our game. I thought we did a lot of really good things. To me, it wasn't a 4-1 hockey game. Credit to them. They made a few more plays, a lot of blocks. If we play like that, I like our team.
Statistically, analytically, an awful lot in favor of Rochester last night, some by a 2-1 margin, some by a 3-1 margin, but in the end, a 3-goal defeat at the hands of Caden Primo, and the Laval Rocket has Rochester on the brink as they look ahead to Game 4 tomorrow night, and they hope a Game 5 on Friday on Sunday. Another stunning weather day here in the Queen City with Marty. I'm Brian. Hi, Martin.
Stunning if you're a duck and you like the puddles and you want to just go swim around. That's what it is. But a little chilly, a little rainy. Stay inside and get some work done and watch some highlights and get ready for a game 2 between Florida and Carolina tonight, a game 4 between Rochester and Laval tomorrow. So that's what we're getting ready for.
And a double dose of hockey insiders, talent, if you will, in the form of Shayna Goldman and Darren Dreger today on the show. Why, you ask, would we double up at such a time of year? It's because we're giving you the extended holiday break from us for the next 4 days. We are off on Friday and Monday as part of this Memorial Day weekend. So thank you and congratulations to all of you.
Monday because it looks like it's going to be sunny and a little warmer, and maybe I'll fire up the smoker or something. Jacob's usually the one that does the smoker. I haven't used it yet. And he's like, Dad, you know, it's pretty easy. So maybe I'll have to throw in something Sunday night and have it ready for Monday morning.
I feel like your voice is just getting back to full form. So perhaps don't stay too close to the smoker if you plan to engage in that kind of activity this weekend.
You're giving me a couple of really good ideas. So, so maybe we'll be let's just put it. Smoker is a cooking device, nothing else. That's what it is.
Indeed. And unfortunately it was a tough start. Although here's the thing. You have to score in a playoff game to win. So I really don't care that the Amherst gave up a goal 15 seconds in last night. It's like, whatever. Okay, so now you're behind. And what precipitated it? In-zone turnover. Happens almost all the time. Metsä turned it over. They looked like they recovered in front of the net. Puck goes out to the point. Then it gets redirected by Tuck. It's 1-0. You still had to score at some point to win this game. And guess what? The rest of the game moving forward, as we said off the top, analytically, statistically, zone time, offensive zone possession-wise, and shots on, shots attempted, all in favor of Rochester. However, stop me, because you've heard this before. This has been a theme for the Amherst against Laval this year. Yes, the Rocket are the number one team in the American Hockey League. However, what has plagued the Amherst, didn't in game 2, but did in game 1, could have been game 2, as we mentioned with Michael Leone yesterday, all the chances they had in the first period. This was not a super high chance game, Marty, but over the course of the game, the Amherst were consistently in the ozone more. They just did not execute line 1 through line 4, and you marry that with some tough turnovers that directly result in goals against. You're on the wrong side of it.
So we'll talk Devin Levi in just a little bit, but
quickly, because we got Shayna coming. So
yeah, so we got 6 or 7 minutes. But so I'm going to look at the rest of the game. You're right. Like the Amherst had some good looks, but I don't feel like they really pushed Caden Primo to an uncomfortable position to say, "Hey, you know what? We are going to attack you." Look, Rusek's goal was one that. You could see that Primo is a little sideways. Like he's thinking, is he going to shoot Kulik, make a nice play? He avoids the check, makes the play. Rusev comes in, goes top shelf. Like, that is the type of plays that you need to see more. There were some scrambles around the front of the net, but they're not clean plays. So there was some good looks, but the clean plays weren't as clean as you would want them to, or executed or finished in the way that you would want to. So you're right. Like, there was some numbers that were good. Puck possession, shot attempts, shots, offensive zone possession time. It was great. But did you get to a place where you felt like you really got the finishing touch that you wanted to score more goals? Because you're right, you give up a goal 15 seconds in. Okay, so if you start the game and you say, let's say it's soccer, it's aggregate, right? And you're down 1-0. No big deal. Like, if we win the game 3-2, we're going to go to OT and win it in OT. So you give up a goal 15 seconds in. It kind of is a gut punch, but recover from that. And I think that they recovered on that side of the game. They just couldn't really finish when they had the opportunities for clean looks.
And, you know, they go 0-for-2 on the power play, including one at the start of the third, which was really nothing. However, they did score after that, a couple of shifts later, and got that equalizer from Rusek, who, by the way, 30% shooting percentage in his career in the postseason. Like, it is still ridiculous, the efficiency with Rusek shoots the puck. They didn't change the lines too much through the course of the game. There were some tweaks. There were some tough moments in the third period after they tied the game at one, as this game winner from Jack Eye is elite finish. It's a turnover in the neutral zone by Metsä. It's done, perhaps not pushing Jack Eye out even further to the outside. It's Novikov not really reacting to the play, and it's Levi getting beat up high on, like I said, a great shot. Unfortunately, after having just tied the game, this created a five-minute spiral where they allowed three goals against.
Yeah, so, I mean, when you look at that goal, you're right, there's a lot of mistakes in front of Evan Levi, but your job as a goaltender, especially in a situation where lefty comes down the right side on the backhand, you can't let him score on that shot. It's a good shot. It's a really nice goal when you're going to play on the highlights. But when you look at it from the goalie's perspective, you can't get beat on a backhand shot short side like this. Like, it was a nice shot, but it hit the back bar. It didn't hit the crossbar down. Like, it went about, you know, between the elbow and the shoulder of Devin Levi. It didn't go over the shoulders, bar down, and in. And I think Devin didn't adjust to the angle on that play. So when Jack Eye goes to the backhand, like, you need to maybe lean over to your glove side a little bit, because all of a sudden he moved the puck 4 feet, and that changes the angle. It's almost like Devin was anticipating Jack Eye to come back to the forehand. So I'm going to stay here. I'm going to hold pat because he's going to come back to the forehand. But there was no backdoor threat. There was no nothing. It was one that you needed to play straight on, and he didn't. But even, you know, in the end of the first period, early in the second period, there was moments where I felt like Devin was chasing, right? There was pucks behind him. There was, Lindstrom wrap around where he chased. Like, Laval knew exactly how to attack Devin Levi yesterday.
Right,
they,
I thought he was
made him chase. They exposed a few of his active play, and they exposed that.
They did, but they weren't scoring at that point. Other than the tip goal, 15 seconds in, he got through the first and second periods really clean. And I thought he was excellent in the second period, despite and acknowledging and agreeing with everything you just said about some of the scramblier moments. So they're fine in the third at 1-1. The goal that we just talked about puts them up 2-1. It's another turnover after that by Wahlberg in the offensive zone that leads to a rush chance. And again, this is why it's a tough game to read. Like, yes, the Amerks ended up being better in offensive zone time because a lot of Laval's production came off the rush. Levi on this play happened to think that Dauphin briefly clipped him before he ended up wide open on the pass across. But this was a play that ended there started with a Wahlberg turnover, and then probably Ostlund not getting the trailer on this play, but Komarov didn't help anything by sliding across the ice. So all in all, it took 6 seconds, one end of the ice to the other, to put the Amerks in a really big hole.
Yeah, and Dauphin did make contact with Levi in the crease. That did happen. So I know why Devin is complaining, but once again, like, after the contact, I feel like Devin got sideways, got overplaying. Who was it? Trudeau with the puck carrier and did not read the play really well, but there was contact. And if this was the NHL, this is a challenge for goalie interference, and they would have won it. They would have won it because of contact in the crease, and the game would have been 2-1. So would Devin, did they take advantage of his overactive play? Yes. But I think this is one that would have been called back because of goalie interference if it had been challenged, if it was the NHL, but it's not in the AHL.
Cale Clegg has been great in these playoffs, but his goal-scoring streak ended last night, and he had a tough moment that led to the fourth goal. He had a couple of turnovers in the corner, and then a failed clear right in front of the net that ends up on Waugh's stick, and it ends up being 4-1. So that's how the scoring ends in this game. And so, again, you can directly look at turnover, immediate response by Laval, and that's their efficiency, which they have shown all year. And obviously now the Amerks look to tomorrow night to try to get this even. And let me just say this, Marty, they have won twice in Laval this year. They could again put themselves in a position to do so last night. I almost love the scenario here. They've played five times in Laval this year. They've won two, they've lost three. Guess what? There's two to go there. Make it feel like you're winning a seven-game series. I know this one's a five, but you can win four out of seven in Laval based on how they've played this year.
Yeah, no, I think they can come back, and I think they absolutely need to do a better job in front of Levi. They didn't really help the front of the net, and that, to me, is somewhere they need to be better, and it will help Devin, and they can win if they really protect the front of the net better, which started with Luke Tuck deflection early on. So that was Rochester last night, and hopefully tomorrow night's a better one.
Shayna Goldman joins us as we get the transition to what happened in the NHL last night in the Stanley Cup playoffs, and obviously what is to come in the Eastern Conference tonight. Shayna, the Oilers' penalty kill last year was 94.3%. It is 62% right now, and is the reason why the Oilers are down in the series. In the series.
Who would have expected that? When you look at last year's Western Conference Final, the Stars had no power play goals in that entire series, and they didn't create a lot of quality looks either. So it seems like they figured something out, right? Like, the power play has been really good for Dallas all postseason. I think it's helped make up for what they lack at 5-on-5. So to have that start to the period was definitely a nice energy boost for the Stars, but the Oilers might want to get back to those shorthanded strengths. I think we saw progress against the Golden Knights after a bad series against the Kings, but that's not how you want to start now.
Well, I mean, 5-on-5, it seemed like everything was fine. Was the hooking penalty at the end of the second period really a hooking penalty? Like, I looked at it and it was a little ticky-tack, right? Like, you could let that go, and that started to unravel what was two high-sticking penalties at the start of the third, and all of a sudden three power play goals in a row, and you're kind of off of that.
Yeah, it's playoff officiating. It's something, right? Because we know that penalties aren't called as often later in series. We know the penalties aren't called as often as the rounds go on most years. So I guess you could say it's a game one penalty if you're going to call something, but I didn't love it. But at the end of the day, like, you can't do anything about what is or isn't called. It's just how you respond when they are called, and it was not the best response for the Oilers.
Yeah, I mean, Stuart Skinner wasn't great. Like, they were able to take advantage. Although Jake Oettinger gave up some goals on clean shots, and I'm like, oh, maybe the Oilers have found Oettinger's weakness. Like, do you think that Dallas is so far ahead when you look at the goaltending? Because I wasn't sure that last night was a good indication of that. But overall, I mean, Oettinger's got to be miles ahead of Skinner. And if you get the same results as you did last night, this will end early.
You're asking my opinion on goaltending. Aren't you the expert?
Yes, no, I want you. I want you to give me your opinion on that. Yes.
I do not think Jake Oettinger had a good start to the series at all. Like, it did. He did not look as sharp. And sometimes I think it's that confidence, right? And we saw that a lot in the last series and earlier this postseason with guys like Hellebuck, right? You allow one or two bad goals and then you're unsure of yourself and you see their movements a little bit different. I think that the Stars have a very clear edge in net in this series, but I also think that McDavid and Draisaitl can challenge the best goalies in the world. So that's, it's going to be interesting. I think the Stars goaltending does need to be better, right? Like if you're going to.
Trip Taco, just $2.99. Comes with a big Q, this deal's so fine. Brisket breakfast, so much to choose. For $2.99, you really can't lose. Taco, 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 Taco. This deal's legit. Taco, Taco, Taco. Only at Quick Trip. Taco to go, Taco to go, Taco to go. $2.99.
To have a shaky start, it's better to have a shaky start than a shaky finish, if that makes sense. And I don't think it's going to be a problem necessarily for them in the series, but I also don't think this is going to be nearly as low scoring as the last round was.
How about the depth? You look at the Oilers' depth in the last round was so good. And look, I mean, maybe it can have an impact again, but Dallas didn't have the depth in, you know, the series against the Jets. And now you have Sagan and Duchesne, and all of a sudden you're like, okay, maybe their depth is going to come back. Do you feel like they can overcome what maybe Draisaitl and McDavid can do by just having Seguin and maybe Mason Marchman and those guys really step it up? Or is it still even keel when you look at the offense?
I think the Stars, if everybody's firing on all cylinders, will be enough to get past McDavid and Draisaitl, but it's literally going to take everyone. And that was the difference, not just, you know, this year we're talking about, but if you go back to last season, when these two teams went head-to-head in the Western Conference Final, the top line had very good numbers, but couldn't break through. The Matt Duchesne line got crushed last year.
Yes.
They weren't generating enough. And even guys like Wyatt Johnson, who had two really good rounds to that point, didn't play well enough against the Oilers. So if the depth is going, that's going to be really big for Dallas because they made it through last round without it, right? Like because of the power play in part. And I don't know if you can expect that through the whole series, especially if we see fewer things get called. So you're going to need guys like Sagan to be good and Marchment and Duchesne and also Jamie Benn and Johnston to pitch in because you at least should think you're going to get more production from the Rantanen line and Granlund and Hintz, right? Like you think you're going to get that top line production. So if those two kind of neutralize each other, which we'll see how the Oilers proceed with this, right? Because they started with the spread out approach, but then when they needed to, they throw McDavid and Draisaitl on the ice together in the third period because they need scoring. You know, what's it going to look like at the start of next game? I'm not so sure because we've seen them go both ways. So if the top lines neutralize each other, it's depth versus depth. I like it for the Stars. But if McDavid and Draisaitl stay apart, I think the Oilers could be a little bit more dangerous.
I'm going to ask you a couple more questions on this series and then we'll jump off to some other NHL topics. But Matthias Ekholm has been practicing with the team and they kind of, it's been rumored that maybe he will not be available for the first couple of games, but I think there's always that game time decision. Since the Oilers lost game one, is there more of an urgency to say, let's bring Ekholm in game two so we have a better group on the back end? Or does it matter if Ekholm comes back? Because that back end has done a pretty good job for the Oilers.
I would wait. I think sometimes it's so easy to rush a guy back because you're in this like panic situation. So I would avoid that at all costs, especially because we've seen the Oilers go down 2-0 in a series before and be just fine, right? And the Kings are not the Stars. It's very different opponents, very different situations. But I think that there's always that risk of like, are they healthy enough to play? Are they healthy enough to be effective? Are they going to be at their top strength? And we saw how the Stars didn't rush back Haskinen. And I think that was really important for them that they played this patient approach. And you look at the dividends and how good Haskinen looks already, that with Ekholm, if he's not at his top speed, I think it's just going to leave the Oilers exposed, especially when we know that they figured out a way to like reshape their defensive pairs, that they have three good pairs. I wouldn't panic just yet.
I know, Duffer, you love Mikael Granlund, and we talked about him yesterday as, you know, maybe he doesn't re-sign with Dallas, and maybe he does. The finish line is great. Shayna, do you think Granlund is as advertised right now? Would you throw your checkbook at him a little bit in the offseason?
I think the middle class is going to get overpaid. I just think... That includes Granlund. I think general managers are going to miss out on the elite talent because there isn't a ton this year. And because they have this increased cap space, they're just going to be throwing out contracts. That being said, do I think Granlund's a good player who's worth a lot more now than he was last year? Absolutely. Because you look at just how good he was before he came to the Stars, right? Like, he completely revitalized his game in San Jose when he didn't have a lot of offensive support. Yes, he had more power play minutes there and more offensive opportunities than he had in, say, I don't know, Pittsburgh before that. Yeah. But he really put in the work to get that effectiveness back. And now you're seeing it with Dallas, because it's something to be thrown in with good players. It's another thing to keep up and actually compliment them. So do I think that he is as advertised? Yes. Do I think he deserves a nice contract this summer? Yes. Do I think the contract could be an overpayment still? Absolutely.
The only contract he will consider will be from Dallas. End of story. Bet the farm. He's going nowhere.
Bet the farm.
Some things are just too easy. So,
yes.
Now, other things become more complicated and or questionable or make a ton of sense. So answer this for us. What is Chicago getting in Jeff Blashill as their head coach?
Who is to say? Okay, I have been asked a lot about this one because it seems that nobody knows whether or not Jeff Blashill is a good coach. And I'm going to add to the choir and say, I truly don't know. Yeah. Yes, he coached 7 years in Detroit. You could view that as a win. You could also say that he had way too long of a leash in Detroit. You could also mention that his roster, especially after that first year, was really bad, right? Mm-hmm. Like, he was never in a good position. He was never had a chance to really succeed there. So you could look at it and go, okay, that's a problem. But the other part of it is sometimes, and I'm all for giving a first-time coach a chance. Like, that's absolutely true. A lot of times, though, when a first-time coach fails, a team wants someone with experience. And that's what happened with Luke Richardson as a first-time head coach and then Sorensen, right? So they want someone who has that experience. Well, sometimes you find someone who has that one other experience, and that second time is the key to figuring out everything they got wrong in the first place. And when you have that space between your two tenures, I think that puts you in the best position to succeed, because you're not getting a job 5 minutes after getting fired. Because if you were, why would you change anything about yourself? Because they're hiring you for what you just did, right? Mm-hmm. He had all the time in the world to reflect on what he did right or wrong the first time. And that worked for guys like Mike Sullivan. It's working for Scott Arneal. There was a really good story in The Athletic by Aaron Portsline talking to Arneal, who said he thought he had all the answers in Columbus and it turned out he had none. So we'll see what Blashill's learned. And the fact that he was in Tampa Bay under someone like, I don't know, John Cooper, one of the best coaches in the league, is going to, I would assume, help him figure out how he needs to lead this time around. So, you know, there's other contextual factors to consider, like how is your general manager? What's the coaching staff going to look like? And what's the quality of the roster? But I think it's fair to give him this shot.
Michael Pecker is also joining Jeff Blashill as an assistant coach with Chicago, leaving the New York Rangers. So he was one that was staying, you know, when they fired Peter Laviolette, they let go also of Phil Housley, but Pecker was still up in the air and he's joining the staff in Chicago. Now, Seattle, Boston, and Pittsburgh still have coaching vacancies. Have they now missed the boat? Because it seems like the good candidates are like slowly leaving, and you're kind of leaving it to a little bit later in the process. So who's left, and is this going to be good enough for Pittsburgh, Boston, and Seattle?
I think the only coach those teams should be kicking themselves that they missed out on is Mike Sullivan, of the people who have been hired so far. And Mike Sullivan was going to pick his own path. So if you weren't in it, it doesn't really matter at the end of the day. Okay. I think that there's still interesting options out there. Someone like Mitch Love is definitely intriguing. And Todd Nelson's another one that stands out to me. I think that the AHL, we're seeing a lot of coaches develop there, right? I think it was John Tortorella who said it a couple of years ago, how he doesn't need his AHL coach to necessarily run the same system as him, because that coach is trying to carve out a career for themselves and make a name for themselves. So they can't do that if they're just replicating what you do at the NHL level. So I really think that there's a cool opportunity here for coaches to kind of make their mark and make their impacts as a head coach, right? Because sometimes you have to weigh what's better, having that experience at the NHL level as an assistant or an associate coach, or having that AHL experience. And coaches like Carberry had that in Hershey, right? And Warsawski had that. Both obviously went to the NHL before they became head coaches, and they were assistants and associate roles. So maybe that's what they want for everyone wants to see from Todd Nelson first. But he is the most interesting name to me out there, because he feels like the next best thing. You know, you look at the success Hershey has had, you look at some of the work he's done with players, guys like Connor McMichael really rebuilt their games under him. So he's the one that I would be like buzzing around if I'm any of those teams.
Yeah, with Todd, it's interesting because he's been in the NHL before and then took potentially the long road back here, but no one's had a more successful path based on 9 straight playoff series wins until Hershey's ouster last night at the hands of Charlotte. So their run is done, but that run included 2 Calder Cup titles, and now the winner of Rochester and Laval awaits Charlotte in the conference final. So yeah, Nelson's an interesting name for sure. Quickly, the 2 coaches that go head-to-head again tonight are... I don't know. They're about as fun and entertaining and passionate and well-spoken and quotable as you're going to find in Brind'Amour and Maurice. What's your take on what happens tonight in Game 2 in the East?
I'm really, really interested to see what happens tonight. I kind of wonder about the rest versus rest conversation. It's not like the Canes had the longest of layoffs, but I think the Panthers definitely had the adrenaline going, right, from Sunday night to jump into a game on Tuesday. I think the other part of it is, the Canes need to play their game, right? And that's something Rod Brind'Amour said. Everybody knows how to prepare for us. Try stopping us. Well, the Panthers did a pretty good job of that, right? And I think the Canes were trying to play a little bit more physical than we know them to be and kind of play the Panthers' way instead of their own style. So it'll be interesting to see how they manage that. And I think one thing to manage is going to be, how do you stop the Panthers' defensemen from generating offense, right? Because we saw guys like Mikola stepping up, right? He's looking like Bob Orr out there. How do you stop that? Because I think if you cut that off, then the Panthers forwards, yes, they have a lot of rush-based talent that are going to be able to spring play right back into the offensive zone and then get to work off the cycle. But if you can stop that defense and suffocate them the way we've seen them play this entire postseason so far, that's going to be huge. But it is a reminder of like the different strength of caliber of opponents so far.
Yeah, quickly, can Florida win a second consecutive cup without having Matthew Tkachuk score any goals? Because he hasn't scored in, what, 10? Like, that's crazy.
Yeah. Yes, I think so, because that third line has been so dangerous. If the first 2 lines are going and then the second line doesn't create as much but wins their minutes, you'll be fine. And that's what they're doing so far. Against the Leafs, that Tkachuk line had really good underlying numbers, but he only had 4 assists to show for it. I don't think he's 100%, but this is going to be a good test of that.
All right, there's only one answer on the board. Hands at the buzzer. Who is the Panthers' leading playoff point getter?
Brad Marchand.
No.
Aitu Lutsuranen.
Aitu Lutsuranen. Ah. Yes, 13 points, I believe. So
13
yeah.
is
pretty
correct.
Good.
13.
And they have 8 of 10 or more. So they had 8 players with 8 points at one point, at one time in the Toronto series, and now they have still 8 with 10 or more points.
Would you like another fun fact pertaining to the Panthers' leading playoff scorer?
Yes.
He was not brought in by Bill Zito. He was brought in just months before. Can we name the previous general manager responsible?
Bill Talon.
Dale Talon is correct.
Yeah.
And that ends up being, maybe it's a legacy acquisition here. Talon for the Panthers, because this seems to be paying off well. Trocheck was involved in the deal, and obviously back then it was more one way, but this looks pretty good for Florida right now. He's just one of those reliable 30 to 40 point guys who's having a breakout postseason.
Yeah. It's good to
Talon
have, right?
Brought him in, but Zito kept him. That's
exactly.
It. Sometimes that's the key.
And developed him instead of being like, you know what, his underlying numbers are good. We hate him. Get rid of him because the nerds like him.
Thank you, Shayna. Enjoy this weekend. And we will reconvene next Friday, I'm assuming.
Probably. Who's to say? Thanks
Who's
for having me.
Thank you, Shayna. Shayna Goldman from The Athletic. Darren Dreger is next here on Sabres Live.
Taco just $2.99. Comes with a big cube. This deal's so fine. Brisket breakfast, so much to choose. For $2.99, you really can't lose.
Taco, 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 taco.
This deal legit.
Taco, taco, taco.
Only at Quick Trip.
Taco to go, taco to go, taco to go. $2.99. Taco to go.